You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There's news to talk about in the reinvention of Detroit and the push to wean Michigan's economy away from big manufacturing. Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes is here with us to tell us entrepreneurs are leading the way. Your column today, Daniel, declares that Michigan and Detroit are open for business again. Why?
Well, you know, you would think that a state that had essentially founded a lot of major industry a century ago on entrepreneurship with people like Henry Ford and Dow and others would always be open for business. But in fact, it had a long period where it wasn't, or was perceived to be very hostile to business and a place where a lot of people didn't want to come. And entrepreneurship, also venture capital, was really dying on the vine. That has really changed. And the Michigan Venture Capital Association put out a study that basically talked that Detroit has become a hotbed of entrepreneurship and venture capital funding, the city of Detroit. And, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, certainly not 10 years ago. I mean, you look at someone like Dan Gilbert and Quicken Loans, I mean, that is an entrepreneurial, essentially, startup. It's now huge, and it's the second largest mortgage lender, I think, in the United States as we speak. But the story in a lot of what's happening in business in Detroit is really about innovation and entrepreneurship. You're seeing car companies that for the longest time had been viewed as these plodding behemoths that couldn't get out of their own way, a couple of whom had to be rescued by the U.S. taxpayers, now are acting more and more like, trying to act more and more like entrepreneurial startups to move more quickly, to be more decisive. And I think that is all net-net very good for Michigan and the Detroit business community.
When I see in your column today here, according to that report from the Michigan Venture Capital Association, when you think that in 3 years Detroit startups have jumped 50%, you're right, that is really big. How much of that is related to manufacturing or mobility?
Not as much as you would think. Most of it is life sciences, and the lion's share of it is information technology. So it's very techy. And I think what's really important here is this begins to change the narrative about what Detroit really is. We all know that there's a lot of caricatures out there about Detroit, about the Detroit automakers, that were, of course, accentuated by the bankruptcy and the meltdown in 2008, 2009. I think what happens here is this begins to change the narrative, and people who know, people who spend the time, who come here, who investigate what's really happening here, understand that there's a lot more nuance here. And I think what's really also important is to understand this in the context of this state for a long time had been, as you said at the top, wedded to big manufacturing. That was kind of the DNA of the whole thing. People worked for manufacturers, whether they worked on the line or they were engineers or they were in sales and marketing. That's what you did. And working for small companies that were nimble and agile was, those were people that really couldn't succeed. They couldn't get the big job in some of these other places. I think what's happening now is you have not an either-or thing happening in Michigan business and Detroit business, but it's both. It's understanding that the big line companies have to be very competitive in what they're doing. They have to be a lot more nimble, or they're not going to survive. And clearly, the auto companies are going to continue to be challenged by Silicon Valley as they move deeper and deeper into autonomy and electrification and mobility.
I have to get your thoughts on yesterday's action by the State House passing the Good Jobs package of tax incentive bills for Michigan, which basically lets companies creating new jobs in Michigan capture new personal income tax revenue from new hires. Senate already passed it. Governor Snyder wants it. He's going to sign it. What's the answer to critics who say, all right, here we go again, more tax giveaways, we're going back to the Granholm era?
Well, number one, they're not going back to the Granholm era. I mean, you have to look at tax policy in Michigan. They've reformed Michigan, the single business tax. We've got a flat corporate income tax, which is considered one of the more competitive in the country. It's a different tax environment, number one. Number two, it is true that the Granholm administration was picking winners and losers, and the most obvious example of that were the film credits. And I remember writing about it at the time that people were talking about, we're creating an industry. Well, that industry, in air quotes, disappeared the day after those tax incentives stopped. So, in fact, they weren't creating an industry. You were essentially subsidizing people who were just going around looking for the best subsidy. And if they couldn't get it in Michigan, they'd go to another state. And, in fact, that's what they did.
But isn't that going to happen with this? People are looking
for... I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, because I think these companies... I mean, site selection is a very complicated thing. And if people think it's just about tax giveaways or tax incentives or whatever word you want to use with tax in front of it, it's more complicated than that. Number one. Number two, these things are structured in a way that the companies reap the benefits only if they provide the jobs and only if they continue to provide the jobs. So you don't get the benefit and then say, okay, we got our money now, we're out of here. That's not the way these things work. Number three, I think it's important to note that this is all about net new jobs. If you don't create those jobs, you're not going to get that tax revenue. It's really very simple. It's not unlike some of the stuff that was going on in Detroit with the Illich Arena, the Little Caesars Arena. They were able to capture some tax money because they invested there. If they didn't invest there, what was going to be there?
Nothing.
I mean, I think one of the questions that people need to ask themselves is this: if not this, then what? One of the things that I keep saying is, you know, I keep hearing from people, libertarians and essentially flat taxer types, you know, where does this nirvana exist? You show me where this nirvana exists in the United States. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't. And there are states are competing against each other. It is cutthroat business, and they're all doing it for the same reasons. There's political benefit to whatever administration is in power, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter, if they're able to land these jobs. You have states to do different things and fund their pots of money in different ways. In reporting this, it was interesting for me to learn that Ohio, that one of the pots of money that they use to incentivize business development, guess where it's funded by? Booze. So every time somebody goes and buys a fifth of Jack Daniels in Ohio, a portion of that money, of what they're spending, goes into a pot of money that the state or its economic development arm can use to incentivize businesses. And the fact of the matter is that Michigan has lost out on some of these opportunities because those cash incentives, and we're talking about cash, we're not talking about a program, we're talking about cutting a check. And Michigan's not talking about doing that, by the way. That they are losing out to rival states. And they've got some other disadvantages that other neighboring states like, say, Indiana and Ohio have. Number one, they've got northwest, north, south, and east-west transportation corridors. We don't. I mean, you don't go very far north, and there's nothing up there, right? Mm. We have not been able to upgrade our international border crossing. This is one of the busiest international commercial border crossings, certainly in North America, and we've been screwing around with the bridge for how long?
A long time.
A long time, right? So, I mean, when you're looking at an investment, and you're looking at how are we going to be able to move goods, how are we going to be able to get supply in for our manufacturing, how are we going to be able to get the goods out to our customers? There are other states that have some advantages. So, you know, how does Michigan compensate for that? Well, one way it compensates for it is it's got a lot of technically literate people who can work in these companies. That's a benefit. There are other ways that it can't. And so I think this is all part of a mosaic. Now, I understand that the people in Lansing were scandalized by the tax credits from the Granholm administration. Those were huge numbers. But as I wrote about it at the time, people need to remember what was going on. The auto industry was collapsing at the time. And I think they were panicked and they were panicked and they said, okay, we open the floodgates here. And after that happened, I can remember an executive at a major manufacturer, one of the auto companies, saying to me, given what Michigan has done, you can't not reinvest in Michigan because it's so attractive. So they did. And then the state and the taxpayers had to pay the piper. What I think they're trying to do with the good jobs legislation is say, look, that was a bad experience. We don't want to relive that again. But we also see that we are losing out on potential investments in the state. So how do we kind of split the baby, as it were, and create some incentives without mortgaging the future and creating a budgetary nightmare down the road? And I think that's what they're trying to do here.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel House. Thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you.